This is Gary Butterfield.
This is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Adaptation Decay, the show where we look at how people try to adapt video games into other mediums.
Yes. And this month, we are looking at the Silent Hill movie, which was released in April of 2006. Continuing, yes. Like this is two Konami things in a row. We thought that Castlevania was going to be more successful, so we wanted to look at something else that was considered to be, you know, most as successful. I think we got it.
Between the two,
yeah,
they form a completely successful thing, I think.
Yes. So if you watch them synced up.
Yes. Yeah, and put Dark Side of the Moon on.
Right.
People are probably saying, Gary and Cole, it's September. Why are you doing a spooky thing? And to which I reply, where do you get off questioning us at all?
You know, just second, leave it to us, okay?
Trust. Yeah, let's sit in the back seat and let there be two sets of footprints that aren't yours, okay? But no, it is because next month we are doing a Duck Tracks.
Yes.
So October, the spookiest month, we'll get spooky Q&As instead of spooky Silent Hill.
Yes. So yeah, we're getting this out early. And I was excited about this. It's been a while since I've seen it. And by a while, I mean, since we did Silent Hill 3 for, Watch Out for Fireballs. So like a year.
Mm-hmm. I was 1000% convinced we'd already done it. And there's audio and nobody needs that. Like, we don't need to dig it up. I don't know which episode it was, but at some point we talked about which one we were doing and you get to hear, or you could hear Cole convincing me that we hadn't done it. Like, yeah. And I was like, no, get out the list. Like, I don't actually believe you.
Yeah.
And I think what happened was when we did that Silent Hill 3, I also like watched some clips from the movie.
Okay.
And then also when we did Brotherhood of the Wolf, I saw some clips of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So between the two, cause this is directed by Christoph Gans, the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
Between the two, I think I just seen 10 minutes a cutscene or something like that.
Right.
From this. And that made me think like, I had internalized the Silent Hill movie, but I definitely had not seen it.
No. Yeah, that was a very confusing conversation because, yeah. I don't know, somebody says something with certainty. My first thing isn't to second guess them. I second guess myself. I don't know if that's entirely healthy. Yeah. But it's kind of like,
and you'd think that with me having that same thing, I wouldn't be quite so sure.
Uh-huh.
About something like this, but I was like as sure as I've been of anything. So it was pretty ridiculous. But I had never seen this before, so I had no history with it, and I was glad to watch it as well.
Yeah.
Because it is it's interesting. It's mm-hmm. not a total success, but this is an interesting movie, and the things that it does, it's kind of like the things that it does well are very easy to appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the things it does poorly take a while to set on.
Yeah.
So like just like sitting down with it, like it. Like there's times where I was just like, fuck yeah. Like this is, you know, look at this shit. Like this is do it. Queen.
Like, you're doing just throw out a yes queen about Silent Hill.
Oh, Christoph Gans. Yes, brother.
Yeah. Yes. There are sequences in this that are incredibly faithful and do such a good job at capturing and recreating and I think amplifying one of my favorite things in the world, which is walking around the world of Silent Hill and just like appreciating the fucked up mechanics of the way that setting works. Right.
Yes. Yes. And the ways in which this, when it stops doing that, every single time it stops, it is to faint into a less interesting, more conventional movie.
Mm-hmm.
And without fail, every single time it happens, it is a failure. Like it is a sharp decrease in quality.
Yes.
So like, and the movie is long.
Yeah, it's a two hour, five minutes.
Yeah, 2 hour, 5 minutes, which is like in the world of movies, like I get it's not Barry Lyndon, but in the world of video game adaptation movies or even in the world of horror movies,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, an easy half hour longer than the average.
Right, right.
So I would say for about half of the movie, which is a lot, like for about a solid hour, you get good shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time you come up for air from that, it's like going down for piss instead of coming up for air. Like you're walking around breathing chest deep in the golden shit.
Uh-huh.
And it's just every once in a while you like dip your head underwater and take a big lungful.
Yeah.
Of the real golden stuff.
The real golden stuff, Eddie?
Real golden.
Okay.
Today's urine. urine today. So it's like this reverse thing where, and even it's not just like Full Metal Jacket where the first half is good and the second half is bad.
Right.
It's, you know, most of the first half is very good. and then it starts getting crappy, but little bits of the second half are still very cool.
Right.
It's kind of a yin yang symbol.
It's a little bit like a hard drive that hasn't been defragmented, like looking at that map. That's a little bit like how they distribute the good stuff in this.
I think so too.
Yeah.
So it ends up being kind of a frustrating viewing experience because there is a version of this that is like pure good. I think that could have been made. And it's like they didn't even, I was going to say like, oh, like they couldn't be ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they did that, but no, like the ending of this is very ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not ambiguity that they wanted to get rid of with like the kind of studio meddling or conventionalizing of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it feels budgetary. Like almost entirely. And that's such a bummer because you know, when people show up, it's like, oh, we're just gonna have people in robes talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that's very cheap, but man, does the movie just die on it.
Yes, it does.
Like anytime somebody with a robe comes out and starts giving expository dialogue, like I didn't watch this in a hyper focused chamber or anything. I watched this like an airplane or something where like it had my full attention. Like I watched this on my phone at a coffee shop.
Okay.
Because it's just how my day shook out. And it was so hard not to like look away or start doodling or something. It made me feel like I was in class every time like a cultist came out and started talking.
Yeah. It's a little bit ridiculous because it's like at those times the movie decides to tell a different and worse story than I want to see, you know?
And the weird thing is like both the stories, both those things we're talking about are present in Silent Hill,
mm-hmm.
like in the video game series, right? So like, Silent Hill, the video game series, has these amazing and like I am a fan of those. It's not something like you drag me to play, you know. Right. Like I love Silent Hill 2. I like Silent Hill 3 quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to play more in the series. Like I like this series, but even then, I can say that like each one has large stretches of that, like the, you know, the real golden stuff, the good golden stuff, the air golden stuff, the air urine that you're talking about.
You've mixed up the metaphor too much.
But the part where you're above air, where it's like, I'm just exploring this world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dealing with, you know, just this surreality and this like just arresting visuals. But even the games also come into this cult shit.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's better in the games than it is in the movie.
Absolutely.
But it is not the most interesting thing about the games. Like, I would much rather have it just be, oh, this is just an arbitrary, like, wrinkle in space, mm-hmm. where this shit happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And this movie itself, you know, concerns itself with how that wrinkle in space was, you know, happened. This is setting up and explaining everything about why Silent Hill is the way it is.
Yeah. And having an explanation is not the thing you do to, like, engender great horror, like a lot of the time, you know, like explaining, you know, showing what the monster looks like, explaining why this is like this, like,
mm-hmm.
is almost inevitably the least interesting part about any horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Silent Hill always functions at its best when it is a mystery, either at the personal level for any of the individual characters who are going in this not knowing what's going on, maybe not even knowing important details about themselves or about the world around them. Like, you know, it needs to be a mystery. And the problem with mystery in movies is the mysteries often get solved.
Yes. Yeah. My friend Derek came up and visited me recently and he watches more like horror movies than I thought he did. Like, mm-hmm. I knew he liked the genre, but he's a bigger fan than I thought. And we talked about them a lot and he will watch, like, I will watch a trailer for something and be like, well, like, yeah, I don't know about that. And he watches it, which is good. That is to his credit. I was talking about The Boy. You know, do you know The Boy?
The Boy. What is that? The, oh gosh, I know that. It's like a Bruce Willis movie or something like that.
Mm-hmm,
no, it's The Kid.
That's The Kid. That's a very different movie. I have no idea what that's about, except for it's just got like Bruce Willis's doe-eyed face on the front.
Yeah. Like I think he finds, like, he somehow exists simultaneously with the child version of himself.
Weird. I dislike that because at some point Bruce Willis is going to like do something sexual or something that I don't want that kid to do. Or vice versa, like Bruce Willis is going to be subjected to like kid jerk off power.
Oh no.
You know, like, yeah. But The Boy is like, it's a, this old couple hires this babysitter to be a babysitter. And when they come, they find out that it's for a doll.
Oh yeah.
And they're like this list of rules, like just make sure you follow the rules with little Brahms. And then she doesn't follow the rules and then Brahms starts stalking her. And that's the trailer. And it's like, it's reasonably interesting. You know, it's like, that's not, it's pretty cliche, but like, you know, the trailer has some like, you know, spooky images and stuff. And it's a classic thing where, like, a doll, you know, you turn your back and it's moved.
Yeah, it's somehow like the hugest thing. It's like Annabelle now. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And then for people who don't want to know spoilers about The Boy, fast forward about 2 minutes on your podcast. Derek watched it and then he sent me a text. He's like, it turns out it was Brahms all along. And I was like, what does that mean? And he said, the real Brahms is like a mutant and he lives in the walls. And I'm like, oh, like that's so much less interesting than what you have here. Then you did like, and if that had been the premise, like, oh, there's a mutant that lives in the walls, like sign me the fuck up. But like the fact that it's this bait and switch to make this supernatural thing, you know, be realistic, like makes it less interesting to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of those like horror movies have those kind of explanations.
Yeah.
I keep seeing the trailer for the remake of Flatliners and like, I like Flatliners. The trailer looks spooky. I'm sure they're just going to explain away why scary shit happens to these people. It's not just going to be like you fucked with the veil and now you've been Final Destination somehow. I'm sure it's going to be like, wait, you know, this diary from a Dominican priest from like, you know, they found a microfiche in the library says that they did experiments about this and he contacted one known as the other, like, you know, some fucking nonsense.
There's going to be a prophecy, you know, it's going to be brought in. That's one of the things I love about Cabin in the Woods is because like that mundane explanation is only the beginning of like what is going on in that movie.
Yeah. I love that too. And I love that they play with it and stuff. That movie is extremely good. It's this movie is guilty of doing that.
Yes,
it turns out it's Brahms all along, like, and we find out Brahms did it.
Yeah.
Like,
and not just the town of Brahms, which neighbors Silent Hill.
I really want to move Brahms into a pop culture position where people start being like, who'd win in a fight, Superman or Brahms?
Or like, which Brahms?
Yeah, well, I guess it's just like the Omni Brahms, like,
okay.
It would be
if they're
a Marvel versus Capcom character, it'd be like the mutant Brahms holding the doll Brahms, probably.
And in fairness, a lot of the information that we get here is actually present in the games. You just have to work really hard for it. You know, it's that is a benefit of games, that there is this inductive storytelling, and on its surface the information as presented is very confusing. And the version of it that we get here, even the straight explanation that you get, is a less bizarre kind of interpretation of those things.
Well, also, it's not just whether there's a temptation with adaptations. And I'm not saying you're doing this. I'm saying other people do this, where they say, I'll be like, hey, this movie did this and it was kind of dumb. And they'll be like, well, it's right from the games. As if that means that it's not dumb for the movie. You know, and one of the things that we're learning through doing the show is that like adaptation is a very different skill than like actually just creation, you know, on its own. And like you know, making things fit the medium is very important. So like, even though that information is there in the game, the fact that you are getting it in drip pieces, you know, bits and pieces, the fact that you're putting it together yourself, as you mentioned, the fact that it's like text, like it's like, oh, I'm going to read a paragraph of text. Every once in a while, as opposed to just like, we're just gonna have cultists stand around and explain the history of the town for what feels like 45 minutes in this fucking movie, and then literally show you a little mini movie that explains it, like this movie has a cutscene in it that is longer than any cutscene should be in a video game. And there's no other way to describe it.
Like, I was so angry when I saw that in the theater. Like, this, like, when she walks through that door and then just all of a sudden, and we'll get to it. There is a time in this. I've come around in this movie. Like, I was initially much more negative about it. And you know, it's more like I was negative for really dumb reasons, but like that exposition dump and that cutscene, of which there are several in this movie. You know, I feel like betrays the spirit of what I like about these things.
So we'll get into specifics here, but like in general, this is worth watching if you like horror or you like Silent Hill. Just temper some expectations as far as it working as a movie.
Yes,
I think.
So this was written by Roger Avery, screenwriter. He wrote like portions of Pulp Fiction. And it's an adaptation of the first Silent Hill game, and it's got some notable liberties that it's taken. You know, some of which are major and others of which are only going to matter to humorless people like me who take this way too seriously.
And I probably didn't notice a lot of them.
Right.
Because it, you know, I remember games I played once in more broader strokes mm-hmm. than specific names and dates and the like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the biggest change is that the protagonist is a woman. Originally, they were going to have an all-female cast of which this.
Would have been a very good move. I like that.
I think, well, it's weird because I think so, too. And what ended up happening, though, is the studio wanted, there's no dudes in this, add a dude. And they're originally just going to have the husband, who's played by Sean Bean, mm-hmm. Just show up for at the beginning and end. The fact that they needed more man time, though, means that in addition to cutting away from cool Silent Hill shit to cult shit, mm-hmm. we cut away to Sean Bean shit
mm-hmm.
from time to time, which is just not like we'll get to it. It's an interesting thing to kind of Monday morning quarterback because yeah. the you have to show that there are two different worlds.
Yes.
You know how you do that exactly like is tricky. And the way they do it is by having a couple characters exploring what amounts to a pretty boring world while the main character explores cool shit.
Right. And they're overlaid on top of each other. There are specifically like match cuts of them walking around in the same space, cutting back and forth between the two different dimensions. But yeah. what that does is it constantly answers the question of like, hey, where exactly are they? When that I think would be more powerful if it was saved toward the end, like it is in the games.
Yeah.
You know,
I think so too.
Yeah. So like it is presented as this, you know, dimensional spiritual schism pretty much right from the start as soon as Sean Bean comes along.
Yeah. And he does not do great work here.
No.
I like him, but he's not great. His detective buddy also not great.
Detective Gucci.
Gucci.
Yeah.
Not super into the gooch. gotta say.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Sean Bean, a fine actor. I like yeah. him. I like him plenty. His accent in this.
Oh, it's all over the place.
Yeah. So these characters, both Rose and Chris, the two main characters, supposed to be from Ohio. They've got Ohio plates on their car. There's no tag, so I can't see what county they're from. They're from a major city, should be from either Columbus, which I grew up near, or Cincinnati, where I live right now. I don't occasionally like just slur into an Irish accent, do I, Gary? I may not have the
No.
Okay. All right, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, I don't his accent is all over the place. And like does he feel like a character who is written for no particular reason.
No.
You know, like into this movie. Like he doesn't have a whole lot like what the movie's trying to motivate us with, you know, initially is the main character, Rose, like trying to rescue her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But then it confuses things by making Sean Bean trying to rescue her.
Right.
And it's very hard to get invested in either of them. Like it doesn't do the work to get me invested in one of those storylines, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly. Like, you know, not well enough.
Right.
But definitely not for two. So
yeah.
What's kind of cool, so the story is based on Avery had a fascination with Centralia, which is a real life place. This is real life shit. It's a mining town in Pennsylvania that had to be abandoned after a coal seam caught fire. Centralia owns it's a disaster. It is a monument to man's hubris. Like it's all kinds of bad things, but
right.
As far as just haunted locations on Earth, it is mm-hmm. incredibly fun and cool to read about.
Yeah. Go read about it. I think there are some documentaries about it as well. Like I've watched like news packages about it on YouTube. It's, mm-hmm. it's a cool thing to learn about.
Yeah.
But he was fascinated by this. I think his dad worked in the area and would just tell him these ghost stories about this real life ghost town. Awesome. Great.
Cool.
Gans and Avery petitioned Konami for like 5 years to get the film rights to this story, and that's something that I think really stands out about this is that when you read quotes and stories from both of them, they both seem really enthusiastic and knowledgeable about the source material. They aren't somebody who was just like brought in to make a film that the studio is about to lose the rights to, you know?
Right. No, this is extremely like a passion project.
Yes.
Which is cool. It's still, you know, again, like things are fucked up about it.
Yep.
It's not, you know, but it's cool. And that reads, I think that the reasons why this is good.
Mm-hmm.
The reason this isn't Alone in the Dark
right.
is because of that passion.
Right. And you can see this too, like, you know, some of it sticks out because they like their video game ass camera angles, but like Gans would keep a PS2 running on set to show his crew what camera angle or what move he wanted. There's a sequence toward the beginning of this film, or like in the first third of this film, that is right out of the intro of Silent yeah. Hill 1. It's so good.
Yeah, it's really cool to see.
Yeah.
They even brought in Akira Yamaoka, to come in and do sound design. Mm-hmm. And the soundtrack for this, like, is actually either remixes or original versions from the first four games. He originally wanted to have it be all music from the games, but because of the contract, they needed to have a Canadian composer on set. So they had him come in and do remixes, yeah, or her come in and do remixes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you know, in that way, it is significantly more faithful. Again, like, how ridiculous it is it that, like, the Super Mario Brothers movie, you don't get to hear the Mario theme song.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And the music
in that fucking Castlevania show we just talked about, where, like, they replaced all the music with bland orchestra swells instead of, you know, this amazing action filled soundtrack, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Nary an electric guitar to be heard.
This is way cooler.
Yeah, this is way cooler because the music in Silent Hill games, like, fits it like a glove. Like, Yamaoka, yeah, he kind of was the through line through the majority of the series in terms of sound design. Sound design, mm-hmm, is so important, and you can sit down and listen to a Silent Hill soundtrack, or, you know, listen to all of them. Yeah, a lot of it's like this industrial noise, like medicine kind of stuff. There's all kinds of awesome poppy, you know, kind of Twin Peaks, Angelo Badalamenti style stuff, you know, mm-hmm, in there, that is kind of like the tentpole of these. And a lot of that is represented here.
Mm-hmm.
Way into it.
Yeah, I love it.
Another cool thing about this is the majority of the visual design on this is practical, you know, either through costume or set design. And, you know, there is CGI. It's very obvious when it happens. But most of the time, it's an embellishment on something that was already there. People, mm-hmm, you know, some of the criticism was like, oh, these monsters look entirely fake. Well, no,
yeah,
those are dancers who are done up in costume and in makeup and kind of like shot backward. And then they've reversed the film to make it look as unnatural as it is.
Yeah, I get that dancers are fake too. Like, that's what the question is. It's like, are they human or are they dancer? We don't know.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the monsters in general, like, look very good in this.
Yeah.
Again, with those CGI exceptions. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a movie where you see the budget move, because the climax of this movie, which is almost entirely CG, I think looks very bad.
Yeah.
And I think that there is just like an element of being out of money. You know, they had a practical solution in mind for that. The original ending, as conceived, would have looked a lot better.
Yeah.
And they literally, you know, ran out of money.
Yep.
The movie, even though they had all these budget problems, the movie was a financial success. So it about doubled its budget. The budget was $50 million, made about $100 million. Critics didn't like the movie, even though it, you know, it did very well.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's in general terms. Like, it was a pretty lukewarm response. You know, visually impressive, but confusing, kind of boring, vague, all things I can kind of agree with.
Yeah.
And I also think are kind of true of Brotherhood of the Wolf as well.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a Christoph Gans kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Has like a 30 on Rotten Tomatoes. That seems low to me, but I don't know.
Rotten Tomatoes is pretty harsh.
Yeah.
You know, so like almost every other thing we've done for the show, with the exception of Castlevania, has been like in the teens.
Yeah, yeah. Want to know what has a 5 on Rotten Tomatoes?
What is that?
Silent Hill Revelation 3D.
Anything, if you have 3D in the title, you know it's gonna be good.
Yep. So. If that movie is embarrassingly bad. I think about on the level of an Alone in the Dark, actually.
That's real rough.
Yeah. But this one is successful, and I wanted us to watch this. I would not force Revelation 3D on you.
If we were doing the bad movie podcast,
yeah,
that'd be the thing to do. Real quick before we get into it, just because I was opening up links while we were talking to check things, just amazing, like, Centralia fact. There's a 2010 census population of Centralia, 10.
Oh geez. Like,
it's a town, 10 people still live there over three families. Like,
there was a Daily Show piece like back in the mid 2000s where they were interviewing some of the holdouts.
Centralia holdout, like, what an interesting faction.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
like, it's impossible to get there, I think. Like,
yeah.
I've looked at ways to go visit, like, you can't. So, like, I'd have to imagine the people who live there end up having like some kind of like special affordance to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, just bonkers.
10 people. Wow.
Yeah, town 10 people. They're all like 60 and up too. It's all older people, of course.
Yeah.
You know, which is like, I get it.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't want to leave.
yeah, no, I'm 7 years old. I'm not going to move, mm-hmm. you know, even if this like town is slowly driving me insane and like a creeping fog that's accompanied by industrial music keeps rolling on in.
I don't think Trent Reznor's ever played Centralia.
Yeah, he should. That would be like a good gimmick for him. Like, so let's get into it with the beginning of this movie, which I don't love this little bit here.
No.
I think this is like a pretty serious failure, not for the strengths of the movie, but for the weaknesses. Like, I think if this were done better, some of the bad parts of the movie would be better.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is apparently setting up relationships and stakes, and I think does a very bad job of that.
It does it in a very generic kind of way, you know. Which is like this might as well be the prophecy, not the prophecy, the movie, but like a prophecy where, oh, my child is sick, and they keep on saying the name of a place that we have to go to.
Yeah,
like yep. it is bad in terms of it's just really bad in terms of being on the nose, right? They're trying to get directly to it, which is fine because you're going to, you know, you want to minimize the downtime before you get to the cool stuff. But yeah, it's just very ham-handed.
And just that it maximizes the downtime later.
Yeah.
You know, this would have supported the downtime later, but they only minimize it for this beginning part.
Right.
And then they just like luxuriate in the downtime later. So like here, you know, we start out, Rose and Chris are outside at night. They're looking for their daughter, Sharon. She's standing by a cliff by a waterfall looking. And when she looks down, she sees a vision, the daughter, mm-hmm. of this fiery abyss with a scary, like pale ghost girl.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a mildly J horror kind of thing.
Yeah,
that this
yeah.
movie is going to do. And when they find her, she's saying Silent Hill over and over and over again.
Yeah, like, you know, her eyes are closed. Like, Silent Hill, Silent Hill, Silent. Like, okay.
Yeah, like, yep, I'll buy it.
Yeah. So they rescued her at the very last minute before she jumps off, and then we cut to Rose and Sharon in a cool field. With Sharon drawing a lion and the two of them sharing mommy daughter time, meowing at yes. each other. So, okay. Yep. Mom and child love each other. Good. Thumbs up.
Yeah. I mean, that gets established that they like each other not very well, you know,
right.
And we have to read between the lines and know that the mother and father have a bad relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to kind of figure that out. Because Rose says like, hey, you know, we're going to actually do it. We're going to go to this place. When you have these sleepwalking fits and you say this name of this town, it's called Silent Hill. We're going to go there. Okay, baby.
She's presenting it as news to her while they're on the road and while they're on the run.
Yeah. Cause they're running away from Sean Bean, who is like freaking out.
Yeah. Sean Bean wants to institutionalize her, probably for really good reason. Yeah,
is literally like Sean Bean is the hero of this movie, even though I don't like his character.
Right.
Like he's the only rational actor in this whole thing.
Right.
And things don't go well for them.
No.
Going to Silent Hill. Like this doesn't, you know, Sean Bean is the only person who ends up in the real world insane at the end of this.
Right.
Because he wants to go, like, if, you know, if your daughter keeps sleepwalking and saying the name of a spooky town, like at the very least, like, I mean, if they establish like, oh, we've been to therapist after therapist, like, mm-hmm. you know, she's been institutionalized, like it just keeps happening. That'd right. be one thing, but there's nothing in the text really to explain that this is not their like literal first chance is just to find Silent Hill on a map. And hope like
right.
bring their daughter there and like now you're in Silent Hill and then they go to sleep and the daughter mm-hmm. wakes up and goes Silent Hill, Silent Hill, and it's like, oh, it's just two words.
Yeah.
Fuck, it wasn't a prophecy, you know, which would have been the non-horror movie thing to have happen,
right? Yeah. So, you know, and I don't want to keep doing this, but it bears repeating that like in the game it is just them going on vacation to this town that they had a bit of a history in, like, oh, we used to go here when, you know, when you were a kid. Hey, let's have fun, even though mom's dead. And then boom, spooky stuff happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And to do that, like you'd have to, you'd want suggest having a little bit less tie of the little girl to the town,
mm-hmm.
but I would be fine with that, especially for a movie adaptation.
Yeah.
You know, even if that happens in the game, like having this just be the family dealing with Silent Hill, like, put real people in Silent Hill. How do they react?
Yep.
Like I am there for that movie.
Yes. So yes, you know, she explains this and she ignores a phone call. Sean Bean is phone frustrated, and he literally just reveals Rose's terrible OPSEC, finding her open search window looking at American Ghost Towns.
AmericanGhostTowns.com, where he then like looks at the town center hill and is like, no, no. And then it ends up later, he gets like, I think he's leaving a message or something. He's like, did you read the website?
Ooh. AmericanGhostTowns.com is reserved, so we would have to probably pay somebody a lot of money for that. Oh well,
yeah, we have to create it. But it's just the fact that everyone just assumes, like, I don't understand what premise they're operating under.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he wants to take his daughter to therapy, but believes enough that to be scared of AmericanGhostTowns.com.
Yeah,
you know, and it's because of the mind fire thing more than anything. But like,
yeah,
it is. It's a silly, you know. It's yep. silly and quick.
There's nothing there and you will be poisoned.
Yes. Like,
just say that as opposed to like leaning into the fact that this is a ghost town.
Yeah, that's spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're on the road to Silent Hill and Rose sees a policewoman driving by. This is Sybil. Sybil Bennett, presented pretty much exactly as she is in the game. She's portrayed by Laurie Holden. This is the second movie in like a month where she featured prominently. She is she was in The Mist. She was female lead in The Mist.
You know, Rose is looking at her daughter doesn't remember changing
her daughter's drawings. Looking at her granddaughters.
Did I say daughters?
yep.
And she doesn't remember changing them or having them. When I say changing them, I mean changing their diapers, because right. Babies having babies, y'all. Don't go chasing waterfalls. Looking at her daughter's drawings, and like, she made them all spooky, generic, you know, scary kids drawings. She doesn't remember.
Mm-hmm.
She goes inside like, hey, how do I get to Silent Hill? Road don't go there no more. And her card is declined because Chris canceled them.
Right.
This is where he gets to do the, like, haven't you read the website? when she calls to be pissed. But the other thing that happens here that's important is that the cop, as Sybil notices, Sharon, and says, like, hey, you know, are you okay, little girl? Because it definitely looks like a woman kidnapping her own daughter.
Right. And so this struck me as strange. Like, you know, she walks up saying like, hey, are you all right? And Sharon says, I don't talk to strangers. The cop says, good girl. Isn't the cop like, okay, if you're an adult, don't talk to the cops. Aren't kids supposed to like that? Like, that should be the exception. Like, right.
Yeah. Unless this is exceptionally woke.
Okay.
Cause this movie is pretty woke. There is a part where like Rose says, like, get away from you, dumb motherfucking cop, or something like that. I'm just like, by 2017 lenses, I'm way into Rose's attitude toward the police, like, in general. Yeah, don't talk to the police, little girl. Like, it's not going to help you.
Right.
So.
Oh, jeez. But yeah, night falls and they're driving, you know, into Silent Hill. Letter to My Future Self plays. Awesome song. As Sybil pulls up, she's decided to drop the dime on them.
So they're pulling up on him. Rose guns it, and they're doing this little chase. The radio starts squelching out, being real loud, and the daughter starts crying.
Yeah.
And she tries to comfort her daughter, and while she's doing that, she spins out. They see the child on the road, so it comes up at the last minute. Spooky ghost child. They swerve off and swerve off the road.
Very faithful to the game itself.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the screen goes dark for a good long while. Something that I like about this, and we're getting into a stretch of the game. Oh God.
I called the cutscene like multiple times earlier. Like, it's pretty much what we're dealing with. Like,
yeah, we're getting into a stretch of the movie, like up until they get to the hotel, that I think is paced remarkably well.
Yeah.
Like,
this is like the part to watch if you're only going to watch one part of it.
Yeah.
Like, this is very good.
Something that has been so rare in the movies we've covered for this show, let me phrase it this way. Something that has been very common in the movies we've covered for the show is this kind of breathless attitude of like, we always need to be moving on to the next thing. Like, even down to like the shot level, we're entering this part of the movie where characters walk, where we actually like follow their line of sight as they explore. And like, it is mostly dialogue-less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think that that is remarkable and good.
Yeah, it's got that going for it. It is also just like the dialogue-ness and textlessness, in addition to just kind of being unusual and cool pace, like, means that nothing can fuck it up.
Right.
You know, it is just and it ends up being very faithful to the game. And something else that hasn't happened a lot in things we've done is the choices, the adaptations that we've done have chosen when they've been faithful to the game. It's not really to a purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't really work as well as this.
Yeah.
You know, and this is faithful, but like really, really works. And the rest of the movie being, you know, like this again, like a little bit more action, mm-hmm. but, you know, a little bit more movement, a little bit quicker. But like, I would have been down for this.
Yeah, give us some drive. Make it so it's still a story. But again, yes. You know, don't make it, you know, don't turn it into The Crucible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Rose wakes up in her car after like an uncomfortably long blackout. And it appears to be snowing outside. And she goes running for help, noticing that what seems to be snow is actually ash. This is the point where we should probably say, like, the movie had a huge impact on the game series, strangely enough. So in Silent Hill 1, which was the game where it snowed, like, that was just snow. Like, they were showing just the massive variances in weather. There was no coal fire, like, present in that.
Mm-hmm.
After this, it's never snow, it's ash. And even like some of the like world transformation things are pulled straight from this movie in the later games.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's this is where it is visually becomes kind of a one-to-one copy of the game.
Yeah.
Even down to like individual landmarks.
Mm-hmm. Nathan's Drugs.
Like, yeah. You walk by Nathan's Drugs. You remember Nathan's Drugs from mm-hmm. Silent Hill. Like, you might not, but it was one of the businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
it's there. Yeah, they like they recreated storefronts, you know, which it doesn't add an awful lot. It is just there as fan candy.
Yeah, but yeah. It's effective as such.
Yes.
You know, so she sees Sharon in the distance. And he kind of comes running, runs down the alley, and the camera angles mimic the game. Very specifically, the very first alley you're in the first Silent Hill, which like I played, we didn't cover it for the show, but I played it before we did Silent Hill 3.
Mm-hmm.
You go down an alley and the camera chooses to go up to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ceiling. It's outside. Goes, yeah. Looks down on you directly.
Yeah. Yeah. Specifically like past a sprinkler. Yeah.
Yes. As you kind of go, and the camera does that, exactly in this,
mm-hmm.
like moving through this alley is, it's pretty much one-to-one.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very cool.
There are several scenes like that. If you watch the DVD making of, you would have no reason to do this. I was just a huge nerd who had this DVD. They actually, like, tell you how they accomplished some of this. There was some set design where there are, like, walls that pull away.
Mm.
So, you know, in order to achieve these camera moves, where there is a wall, then there isn't a wall, then there is. You know, like, instead of doing that by CGI, they're just kind of like, all right, we're just going to portal to this up.
Mm.
Yeah. Pretty good. But yeah, she's walking down this alley, and she hears a siren sound in the distance. It gets incredibly dark, and she flicks open her lighter to see that the walls have changed in the darkness to kind of this bloody chain. You'll recognize this as being the Silent Hill other world. And,
yeah.
You know, with all of its attendants, spooky set dress.
The aesthetic. The rust blood aesthetic.
Yeah. And also like gurneys covered with body bags, a lot of like hospital imagery, etc.
Yeah. And it just kind of comes into, you know, because it's so foggy, it's not just ash, it's also has a Silent Hill fog.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of just like emerge as she's walking by.
Yeah.
You know, kind of come in, which is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
The road that she's walking in ends that end with this like crucified miner who's there, who is still breathing. She sees it for a good time before she reacts, but you can kind of see she's in shock.
Yeah.
Here. And as she starts freaking out, these little baby demons, the Silent Hill babies, pop up. Yeah. Silent Hill babies. And that when she turns around, the way that she came in was is now fenced off.
Love it so much.
So she can't get out. Babies are everywhere. They're kind of just like reaching for her and stuff. Yeah. It looks really cool.
Yeah. And they've got like, they're kind of like half burned a little bit too. They've got these smolder lines on them, and she's like running and panicking. I think that, what's her name? Rhoda Mitchell does a very good job in this of being like a horror movie protagonist who is desperately affected by the world around her, you know?
Yeah. The director did not like working with her.
No.
Very much. No. Said that she was pretty difficult to work with. Took like several takes to get, you know, to get her character.
Hmm.
And specifically the scenes with Sybil, the actress's name escapes right now, were very hard to shoot because Sybil got into things pretty much right away.
Right, right.
So they would have, you know, just a lot of repetition. So apparently that is on the commentary of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shrug. I don't know.
Shrugging.
But she finds a way out and she gets into what looks to be like a classroom or something like that. And the demons start to overtake her before the world changes back and they burn away into ash and she passes out from panic.
Yeah. It really looks like she's going to get grabbed.
Yeah.
When she pulled out through this door. When she wakes up in a bowling alley, and she doesn't know where she's at, but there's a jukebox playing Ring of Fire, which is the only non-Silent Hill song on the soundtrack.
Also really on the nose.
Yeah. It's pretty on the nose. Like,
I feel good.
Yes. Yeah, no, we probably should have been, Are We Human? Are We Dancer? Cause been like a nice Easter egg for the fan of the dancers in this movie and the people who are rooting for the humans to win. So
did I fuck up by complimenting the fact that they cast dancers as the monsters?
No, I you know, it was just a song that was referenced earlier in the episode. It was just a classic callback.
Yeah. I wanted to tell if there was, if I touched a sore spot by mentioning dancers.
No. I mean, it's the, you know, my favorite Chocobo was killed by a party of dancers, but other than that,
yeah.
Okay.
Good one.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm trying. We got to get back into the episode though, because I'm running out of ways to like extend this. To yes, and this.
We ought to. We ought to. So she starts exploring the town, and you know, finds that the way she came in, especially walled off, or one of the ways out, is now a massive chasm in the road.
Yes, which actually happened in Centralia. There are like big sinkholes.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff is a direct inspiration from the real world.
Yes.
And also obviously happens in Silent Hill. There are huge pits.
Yeah.
Okay, here. And then Helena Bonham Carter shows up. essentially Beatrix Lestrange.
Yep. A little corpse bride pops up. Yeah.
And says, comes behind her, kind of like does this raspy, like vocal performance that I'm not super crazy about.
No,
this character. This is the beginning. You know, I said some of the stuff in the beginning is not super good.
Uh huh.
And just pretty much not here for her or anybody except for our two main characters and monsters.
Right.
You know, which is harsh because we spend a lot of time with these other characters, but I just don't think they're very interesting or good. I don't think the performances are great.
Right. I think Dahlia edges a little bit closer to interesting, but they have completely, she is too wrapped up in the goings on to get out entirely. I also cannot stand her makeup, hair, or costume.
Yeah. She doesn't look cool. Again, she looks like Helena Bonham Carter, like as specifically from Harry Potter. And they also, they made her, a lot of her lines, purposely difficult to hear.
Yeah.
Because the idea being, the director said like, oh, she doesn't have a lot of strength. This drove me fucking up the wall.
Yeah.
Because I was listening to this on headphones, you know, which kind of my fault, but if I was in a theater, this would bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, I kept having to like ride the toggle on the volume.
Mm-hmm.
Because previous to this, 10 minutes before, we were in a car, and when the radio goes crazy, it's the loudest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good idea. Like, I like shocking moments of loudness, but you can't do that and then also have a character who like croak whispers all of her lines.
No. Especially later on when she is doing that in the midst of this apocalyptic, you know, action that's going on.
There's like a soundtrack above it. You know, it just kind of ends up being kind of bad sound mixing.
Yeah.
And until you know who she is and what she's doing here and kind of what her story is, all of the things she says sound like generic, like, you know, canoes can't kidnap people. This one can. You know, like just like spooky, like one-liners.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have the context. And it's not that the context is good, but it just makes her character not. She ends up being the best part of the context that works. When she's contextless, though, she's still the worst thing that's on the screen.
Right.
You know, good on the cult curve, bad on the city curve.
Yeah. You know, she's there and she's saying the stuff, you know, Rose tells her like, hey, I've lost my child. And like, oh, we've all lost our children. They hurt my child. They did terrible things to her. And like, okay, that's fine. Oh, okay. So this is a mentally unbalanced woman.
Yeah, it's just okay. a movie witch.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Rose shows Dahlia a picture of Sharon and she goes nuts. She's mine. Like, okay, whatever. Like, it's true.
Yeah.
Dahlia's telling the truth, but you have no way to know that right now. Right. And even well, in this presentation.
It reads as, you know, again, just like a random crazy old witch.
Yes.
You know, so like, even if it is true and slightly more interesting, it doesn't read as such. Like, it's a be careful what you pretend to be kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she almost pushes her off the cliff, you know, at this point. And we cut away, though, back to Chris, our Sean Bean character, who stopped at a mechanic to be like, how do you get to Silent Hill? And just like, can't. You know, this movie's full, like, you know, Edgetown hillbillies saying how you can't get to Silent Hill. It's closed after a modern accident. And it's like, I've read ghosttowns.com.
Oh, I read for ghosttowns.com. How strange.
Yeah, exactly. You might have read my article. Can't make it to Silent Hill. No how.
Can't get there from here.
But he takes like an embarrassingly large wad of cash and taps it on an engine block.
Like a 50 probably would have done it.
Yeah, and instead it's like 50 is on the surface and it's many deep. So he pays like, you know, $800 or whatever
for this piece of information that he already knows.
Google would tell him, like, we know we have the internet. Like,
yeah,
Google, like, I don't know if Google Maps were around in 2006, but at the very least, like,
oh yeah, MapQuest,
yeah, like, yeah, could have downloaded, printed out a MapQuest.
Yeah. Oh God, we live like cavemen.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Rose has extracted herself from the Dahlia situation and gone back to the car, and she finds a drawing that says school on it.
Yeah.
Which is on the nose for a movie, happens in the game. The car notably won't start, like it won't turn over.
Mm-hmm.
She tries calling Chris, leaves a voicemail, but it only comes through as like static and moaning.
Yes, which comes through in the end. Like that ends up being a thing at the end, is you can't communicate between the two worlds. Like if you're in the static hill or in the Silent Hill, there's like three levels of worlds we're dealing with here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like real world, Silent Hill world, and dark Silent Hill world. And you cannot communicate between them.
Yes.
So.
So Sybil shows up, you know, from behind asking where Sharon is, like, hey, where's the little girl? Sybil's here. She's bleeding from the head. She turned over her motorcycle. Rose was bleeding from the head earlier too, calling into question whether or not they're both dead.
Yes. Like, or hallucinating because we know about the gases in the town.
Yes.
The mechanic just reminded us of that fact.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
But Sybil, being by the books, decides to put Rose under arrest.
Yeah, Sybil's acting real crazy here. Mm-hmm. And this is at the point where he locks her up, where Rose says, you dumb fucking cop, leave me alone, or something like that, which I appreciate.
Fuck you, you stupid cop, is the line.
Yeah. I was trying to find a gif of that, but was pretty into it. We switch back to Chris. The police have fenced off this bridge. He's approaching, and this is where, like, you think you're going to get it's not in the south, but you think you're going to get, like, the southern cop.
The good old boy.
It feels like that to me.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you know, just like, well, hold there is a car, but you ain't gonna get to it, you know. That kind of thing, because I can't place Sean Bean's accent. I also can't Gucci's is all over the place too.
Yeah, he doesn't.
And
this is
our introduction to Gooch.
Yeah, this is Gooch coming up, because they're there investigating, you know, the fence door is down, and they found the car at the end of the bridge. So that's weird. I literally just saw her being arrested by her car. Strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we got the Gooch here. We're going to learn much more about the Gooch. The Gooch gets a redemptive arc.
Yes. Yeah. The Gooch is a cultist who is not a bad guy.
Right.
Spoilers for Gooch. Goochfacts.com should have warned you.
Oh gosh. On the Fog World side, the mountain road is out too. So again, they are completely walled off. Sybil wants to get to the fire tower on the other side of Toluca Lake, which angers Rose, to the point where they're about to fight, and all of a sudden here comes a patient demon, you know, the armless figure coming down from the hills. Yeah.
At some point, Sybil says, sir, I'm gonna need you to stop. And it is such a writhing mass of like armless flesh. It's just a flesh sack on legs, and the fact, sir, I'm an officer of the law, like, it's very funny how obtuse she's being.
Yeah, like just, like, I mean, it's kind of like The Mist. She's like clinging to the fact, she's clinging to police procedure, it seems.
Yeah. Even though the thing is literally in front of her, you know, at least in The Mist, like once they saw the tentacles, they believed it.
Right.
You know, this is like, it's just a guy who, like, writhing towards her, like, oh, that's just a dancer in a costume. I'm not worried. You know?
Yeah. I'm going to need to wait for him to vomit a bunch of acidic poison onto me before I make a real decision about this.
Which he does.
Yeah, he does. Oh. Dissolving her helmet, and she, like, has to, you know, empty a couple of rounds into this thing to take it down before she pulls off her rapidly dissolving clothes. And she is just in the costume from the game, like down to, like, yeah, the patches and stuff.
There's a little bit of, I think it is probably fan candy, but there's a little bit of her, like, pulling off her helmet and shaking her hair.
Yeah.
In, like, mild slow-mo that I think is pretty dumb.
She's I kind of like, I need to be sensitive about these terms. I kind of like how butch she is in this depiction. Like her toughness and that aspect works for me as an interpretation of that character and aesthetically.
Yeah, as being a strong lady.
Yeah.
I just don't like anybody, like, taking off their helmet and shaking off their hair.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's just a weird cliche.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. This sequence is kind of cool, where Rose is finding her way to Midwich Elementary by following the bus stops.
These look, I don't know if they actually are, but they look like the maps are right out of the game. Like, or it looks like it's an intentional kind of drawing.
Yeah. Well, she's like, instead of walking around with the map in her hands, you know, she's in these handcuffs right now. She's like referencing that at the street corners, the way that you would if you were checking the map in the game.
Yeah.
I think this is actually like this is a small detail, and it feels weird to talk about it. Her finding her way around Silent Hill this way feels very faithful to the game.
I don't know if he mentioned it, but she runs away during the thing.
Yeah.
So she's no longer with Sybil. Like, she took that the opportunity to escape imprisonment or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She eventually gets to Midwich, and gets into this office, rummages around, finds a flashlight. Like, they're even finding inventory items in this, which is very video gamey. Mm-hmm. And sees all this kind of, like, religious imagery around her on the walls and the like.
Yeah. And there have always been, like, prominent in shots, like, biblical quotes about how the righteous will cleanse the earth or whatever. Like, it's very, very on the nose. Yeah. Back on the other side, Chris is with the detective, and they're driving through the real Silent Hill. You know, he decided, hey, we're going to take you down here. And it's just rainy. But, like, we've seen, like, this is one of the streets that Rose just ran down. You know, and the detective is explaining, like, hey, it wasn't just that there was a coal fire. There was, like, a bloodbath on the day that it happened.
Yeah. Which is all interesting detail that is exceptionally sloppily presented.
Yes.
Because the Gooch is like, see that barbershop?
That was my dad's. That
used to be my dad's barbershop. You see, there was a bloodbath here. Like, it just, it's very just volunteers a bunch of stuff. And Sean Bean, like, God bless him, is just stoic face stare during the entire time. Like, he can be a good actor. He's not doing great here.
No, this is a CG, a cash.
Yeah. He is working for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So Rose, as she's going through, sees again, that's pretty cool imagery here.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of working her way through the school, sees this menacing group of figures. They're wearing these suits, these protective suits, and they have cages with canaries in them. Mm-hmm. So again, like, taking that mind imagery, which, like, kind of surprised there hasn't been a survival hill game that, like, or a survival horror game that that takes place explicitly in, like, with mining as a thing.
I feel like Silent Hill, like, Downpour has an extended mining sequence.
Does it have a mine sequence? Because, yeah, like, there is imagery to mines that is very spooky.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of time in mines in Resident Evil 4, but, like,
yeah,
I'm surprised it hasn't been used more.
Yeah,
because this is very cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. Well, I love, like, the old fashioned cage with the canary in it, because
yeah,
we see later, like, the birds, they are able to tell when the world change is about to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, like, again, having that ambiguity, we don't know if that actually happens or if it is just, like, gas. So the birds can smell, you know, these gas fumes or whatever, and it's making these people insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is the idea, like, they don't really go for that. Like, this did really happen because she's trapped in the other world at the end. But, like,
right.
It's doing that very typical horror movie, like, you don't know if any of this is real.
Yeah, it is a plausible explanation until it is not.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, she runs, and on the other side of the school, she finds a classroom, which is, like, just a carbon copy of the one in the game. It's really good. Where there's a desk with some fresh handprints on the dust on the top. exposing the carved messages of Witch. And she opens it up and finds a composition book written by somebody named Alessa Gillespie. And gets like this photographic flashback of Alessa being, you know, bullied by the other girls in the school for being a witch.
Yes. And the way flashbacks work in this, as we mentioned, the kind of these cutscenes, I kind of see what there's like a thing that they're going for here, which is to make them look like old, like 70s.
Like Super 8 movie.
Yeah, like Super 8 movie, or like they look like Italian horror movies to me. Mm-hmm. Like super, you know, tons of damage to the film. Yeah. Filmed in Super 8, but that kind of like very 70s quality. Mm-hmm. So it almost like it is like a modern horror movie that the flashbacks are a 70s horror movie.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of a cool idea. It is impossible for me to understand what I think about it without knowing what it would be if it had different content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of it might be cool. The actual content turned me off enough to where it was hard to appreciate.
Yeah.
But maybe this is a cool idea for somebody to get their hands on.
Yeah. It's almost always done in this very like quick cut, rapid Saw presentation.
Nine Inch Nails video.
Yeah.
Like extremely Nine Inch Nails video. People talking about the perfect drug. People are going to fuck you like an animal. Like it is all that.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It is aesthetically cool, but I wish they would have made better decisions about it. She ends up chasing this young girl in a blue dress, kind of all around the school, up this staircase that is kind of impossibly long that just ends at a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Which is,
yeah, it's the weight loss bathroom. Like it's the,
the weight loss. Like,
every time you have to piss, go up like 70 flights of stairs. In which she's like checking the stalls, which this is incredibly video gamey.
Uh-huh.
You know, like way to zero in on the scariest parts of any, you know, survival horror game. It's like, mm-hmm, going through a bathroom and everything pop out of the stalls. You know, she's checking them. There's nothing there until she finds the body of this janitor.
Yeah.
Rigged to it with barbed wire, in a, you know, a very Silent Hill aesthetic.
Yeah.
Way, and written on the walls, it says, dare you, double dare you.
Yeah, with an arrow pointed at his mouth, like at his head.
Yeah. Because she has to pull out this piece of, like, clay, like, plate or something.
Yeah, it's like a piece of a sign or something. Like, it's not clear until she shows it to Sybil later on.
Yeah. But pull something out of this dude's mouth.
Yeah.
It's a pack of Pizzerito combos. So then she eats it and gains some health.
she crushes an ampule.
Yeah.
And this ushers in the change to the other world, right? You know, she locks, mm-hmm, herself into the bathroom. The miners are trying to break in. She's just praying that they won't get in. They have just this awesome shot of the camera going up and over the wall. You know, the canaries going nuts and the sirens come back. And the world goes dark and she turns on the light just in time to see the paint peeling and falling, mm-hmm, off the walls and the rust creeping in and the grating being exposed. Again, one of those elements from the movie that would be taken into the games wholesale after this.
Mm.
Like, I think even starting with Silent Hill Origins would do this a year later.
Mm. Yeah, it looks really neat.
Yeah.
And when they, because there's a part during this too, right? Like where, and I could be confused, where they go back to the real world. Like it shows the miners banging on the door. And when they cut to the real world where Chris and the detective are banging on a door.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Is that here?
I can't recall.
I think that's here. So the implication is there's, you know, obviously there's no minors trying to get in, but she has like locked the door from the people who would rescue her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a cool, you know, idea. Oh. Like she's keeping them out and she's, you know, I think that that's what's going on, but I don't totally know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that shot, but it could happen later if a similar situation comes up.
Yeah. It's vague and blurry.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, like the presence of the underworld has awakened Colin, who is now, you know, like we realize he's kind of hogtied with the barbed wire. Like his feet are, tied very close to his head. You know, it's kind of like doubled over backwards. And he's doing like this pervert tongue, which is an improv by the actor who did this, by the dancer, sorry, who did this. And kind of awesomely, he's spreading this corruption wherever he touches on the walls. Like he places his hand on the wall and there's just like this big wave of diseased flesh like looking growth that extends outward in this big fan.
Mm. Yeah. As this kind of corruption is spreading, and we go back to the first floor, where we have our miners, but there are also these roaches. They're introduced as like wave of roaches. that are coming through and consuming them. Mm-hmm. And this abyss that we have extends all the way down into the ground, down to where there is lava. Like, I don't know if this is supposed to be the fire or what have you, but there's
That's the idea here.
That's the implication, is that like down to the fire. So it's pretty much everywhere. And we go back to Rose. Rose has escaped. Like, she's run out of the room. And she runs past an evil looking version of Sharon.
Right, right.
Who's like scribbling, like, you know, just kind of like blink and you miss it.
Yeah, it's like a Jacob's Ladder kind of shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris and the detective are meanwhile in the real world. Like, nothing is amiss, and there's this great sequence as Rose is running by. He smells her perfume. You know, like, yeah. in this match shot where it's cutting back and forth, like, he's walking in from screen right and she's running at screen left, and like, he starts like chasing after her, running after her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty neat. Mm-hmm. She makes it outside to this like little school courtyard, which this is explicitly from the game as well.
Yeah.
And it has these kind of rusty windmills in it. And then we see our star, the only important character in Silent Hill, the most important villain, and the most important part of the mythology.
I'm so fucking angry.
Our boy Pyramid Head pops out. He's what everyone's been waiting for. He's the Sonic the Hedgehog of Silent Hill. He pops out of the building with a tide of roaches under him, and they move in this like liquidy, gross way.
Yeah,
as thousands of bugs would. And Rose freaks out. One thing that I like about her is, up until, you know, longer than most horror movie protagonists, she acts like she's scared.
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, a lot of times people shake that off too soon, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She does not.
Yeah, she just loses it. Like, she's,
yeah,
you know, like, he's still in pursuit and she's like sobbing and screaming in a hallway.
Yeah.
It makes no sense that Pyramid Head would be here.
No, he represents a thing.
Yep, he's definitely is specific, and this is kind of the beginning of them throwing him around willy-nilly, which sucks and is bad. Here in the movie, he is assigned as Alessa's protector, is the idea, as opposed to being a manifestation of guilt. So, whatever. It's fine. It's a good depiction of him.
Yeah, he looks good. The actor wore high heels for this to be tall enough, and he could not see anything that wasn't his feet.
Yep.
He could look exactly down. Also, one of my favorite bits of trivia from this, the back of the costume had no back. So his bare butt was out. The actress said they told her this was for reasons, but never told her what they were. So they never told her why he had to have his ass hanging out the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently Christoph Gollins had some kind of reason for it.
Yeah.
Later, the end of this is they substituted his original ending for something inspired by an erotic anime.
Yeah,
which makes me question Christoph Gans' taste in general. I'm gonna incorporate this erotic anime thing into my game or into my movie.
It's gonna be super good, guys.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm not you know, it could just be for mysterious Christoph Gans reasons. Like, this guy has not engendered tons of confidence in me.
Right.
He's interesting, but I don't trust him.
Right. He also hasn't made very much. I've only seen two of the things that he's done.
And I think he's got six movies. But I've only seen two as well, so
yeah. So let me see here. Like, the roaches are about to overtake this just completely debilitated Rose when Sybil comes in, you know, to her rescue, and like takes her into this closet. Right, they've got this fan, you know, gigantic, menacing, rusty fan on one side, and the locked double doors on the other. Sybil lets Rose out of her handcuffs and says, "Like, hey, help me bar this door." And we get this kind of ridiculous action sequence of Sybil and Rose trying to dodge the CGI blade that is shearing through the door.
It's really bad looking, too. Yeah. It's not like quite Wolverine Origins bad CGI blade, but like, it's a really bad looking blade. Yeah. And it is too video gamey. Like, it's not Silent Hilly. It's like another kind of video game where it's like, here's the QTE to dodge these things.
Yeah. I mean, this would be a sequence in a David Cage game.
Yeah, that's much more like it.
Press both sticks down to dodge down.
It's pretty dumb. Like, the Pyramid Head, after he cuts through, he reaches in to kind of move the bar. Sybil shoots his hand as he does so, but misses, like, I don't know, 11 shots for the one she hits. Yeah. And it's like right there. And I understand, like, shooting a gun is not like a, you know, Call of Duty. Like, it is difficult to hit a close target,
especially if you're panicked, probably.
Yeah, but like, move a little closer and you know, make sure you hit it, you know, because it becomes a plot point later how few bullets she has left.
Right, right.
You know, so.
Yeah. But this is that's enough to scare Pyramid Head away, which causes the roaches awesomely to kind of like desiccate and dry up. And, you know, they themselves return to ash when everything goes normal.
Yes. So Rose takes the little plate that she got from Colin's mouth, and it's part of a hotel sign. She's like, I got this from somebody's mouth. We have to go there. I know Sharon's at this hotel. And Sybil goes, okay.
I'm along for the ride. Sybil is, you know, credulous at this point, especially because she believes the threat that is being posed to Sharon.
Yes.
You know, there's this backstory to Sybil where she, you know, somebody got kidnapped, like a little kid got kidnapped, and she followed him like a maniac, threw the kid into a mind vent, and she was, you know, down with that kid in the mind vent for like 3 days, you know, keeping him company and keeping him alive until they got rescued. So like Sybil is motivated in that way.
She likes kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does not want to see them get killed.
Right. So Chris, again, back in the real world, asked the detective, like, hey, what really happened here? Interestingly phrased, the detective, the Gooch, says, hey, you should let it rest in peace. As the nearby town won't give Chris the records of what happens.
Yeah, there's a really dumb thing. Like, Chris sucks in this. Like, there's a thing where he's like, give me the records. And the operator, in a rare moment of, like, absolute normalcy, is like, what kind of records? like all of them. Like, he goes, I don't know, police records. And you know, and then they you know, it won't give them to him. But it's so silly. Like, super, super silly. You know, so again, this guy's saying, like, hey, you should rest in peace. We're gonna get more of that in a little bit, but yeah, that's we're gonna get to his big exposition breakdown here in a second.
Yeah. Well, let's get another one as the movie takes a rapid shit. I don't know, rapid, okay. With the introduction of Anna, who draws their attention to the hotel, because they notice that she is hucking rocks at Dahlia.
Yes. Yeah. So they want to stop her here, right? Like, I forget a lot of stuff that happens here, up until we get to the nurses, and then I remember that part, and then like,
and then nothing else.
And nothing until the end, until the dumb, like, Spawn ending that, like, is probably the same ending that was in a Spawn movie.
Anna's like, real, she's real childlike, you know. She's been she basically grew up here from a child. You know, she's 30 years old and this happened 30 years ago. She's, you know, speaks in kind of the sing-song manner, and she is entirely like 100% into the cult. You know, they want to stop because you don't want to see somebody get stoned in front of you on the streets.
Right.
But, you know,
she offers an explanation here. She's like, oh, like, Dahlia was cast out, not even the darkness wants her. Sinners deserve to lose their spawn.
Right.
Kind of letting credence to Dahlia having lost a kid.
Yes.
She says
Christabella keeps them safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amusingly, like, Anna's been out, she was scavenging for food, like, she holds up her catch, like, just a bunch of like tuna cans.
Yeah. Good job. And then Dahlia is there, and like, Rose takes her knife again, just gaining an inventory item.
Yeah, which she loses, like, immediately.
I'm taking this. Yeah. I'm taking this. Yeah. And I just grabbed it. It's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
Anna explains the symbol that we've been seeing all over the place here. It's a symbol of unity, a symbol of our faith. Okay, the cult has a symbol. It's not the cult symbol from the games, but okay. And in the mailbox for room 111, Sybil finds one of Sharon's drawings, again, following these clues that are being left for them. But when they get up there, they find out...
I can't remember why she went to mailbox 111. I know they had
sign. It was the only one with anything in it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. But when they get up there, there is nothing in room 111. Like, they're where that should be, there is just a painting of the first witch burnings, which Anna describes as how the old ones fended off the apocalypse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris, at this point, goes over to the neighboring town where they won't give him the records and breaks in, finds several partially burned boxes of files, and finds a file with the Gooch. And it's about how a badly burned young girl named Alyssa Gillespie, who we know, about her, and the photo looks just like Sharon. So maybe they're the same people. He calls the orphanage where he got his daughter.
Right. Even though the ages don't match up, that could be your mother.
This is a scratch and dent. I want to return it.
Room
111 is behind the painting.
Yes. Yeah. And when they get in there, they see that there's a hole cut between this building and the next. And they jump over. This is where she drops the knife. So goodbye, knife.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
You just need to cut open that. You no longer need this. Throw it away.
2006 to 2006. Near, far.
And this is very video game and very Silent Hill specifically too. These two buildings being connected.
Yeah.
Feels very Silent Hill 3 to me.
It's specifically a beat that happens between two apartment buildings in Silent Hill 2.
Mm, yeah.
I can stop that if you want.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
Did I seem annoyed?
No, I would be annoyed by me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, that's fine.
Okay.
So this is a burned up, like a burnt out cult building.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like vestments like all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rose tries, very precariously to cross these rusty girders because she sees, you know, again, this figure in the blue dress, who looks vaguely like Sharon, across the way. And she, you know, is just walking all over the place. She gets there and this girl turns around, and it's our little Ringu friend. And she says, "Watch me, I'm burning." You know, and she's on fire, and then she blinks out of existence as Sybil, and Anna rush in.
Yeah.
That, like, that Watch me, I'm burning, like that, when I remember distinctly in the theater, that getting a laugh.
Well, because it's the delivery.
Yeah.
Like it's like they're going for creepy, you know, like, oh, she doesn't know the gravity of what's happening.
Right.
And it doesn't work. Like, it sounds very silly. Watch me, I'm burning. You know, it's like it's not a good, she's not a good actor, really.
Right.
Little girl. Even though the what's her head, the main character was incredibly impressed with her.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you're my favorite actress. You did all the roles. You did a great job. Yeah. I don't think she's particularly great as a little girl. She's fine.
Right.
But like little kid actors are, that's hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
So.
Yeah. So we, Rose, says, it mentions Alessa, and Anna, who's there, is like, we don't say that name. You know, we don't say that name. And when they're kind of looking around, they say like, oh, this is, you know, this is the ritual that went wrong. It's kind of weird. They just kind of party, like the cultist like kind of joins the party.
Yeah.
At this point, I remember not really understanding why they were keeping her around or not, like, because they're not prisoners at this point.
Like at one point they say like, oh, she's all we got in terms of getting around this place.
Yeah,
but all she does is like, you know, they're walking down the hallway like, oh, we are very far away from safe spots or something like that. Like
she's like the worst party member.
Yeah.
Just kind of like dropping these little expositional bombs.
Yeah.
Every once in a while.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the birds go nuts, which causes Anna to freak out because she knows that this means the darkness is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And like they start running in the direction of the church. You know, like, hey, yeah, we have to get to safe space. Okay, fine. Let's follow you. Although that seems, I wouldn't run in the same direction as cultists.
No. Like, yeah, they're putting themselves in like a dumb kind of lion's den situation. But,
yeah,
you know, at least, you know, if these guys, I can see the argument like, oh, if these guys are scared, it must be bad.
Yeah.
So they're running. Rose stops at the steps of the cultists while cultists are running past her to watch the birds circle around the symbol that's on the wall, and ends up looking at like one of Sharon's drawings.
I've seen this before.
Yes. Dun, yeah. Dun, dun. They're running up. Dahlia tries to stop them, saying like, no, you know, the cultists are wolves in sheep's clothing, you know,
and Anna cliche number 562.
Yeah, it is the cult stuff. That's a big problem with this cult shit.
Yeah.
Big cliche. And Anna hits her in the face with a rock.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's very like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Pretty direct.
Dunk. And Rose says like, well, you know, what happened to Alessa? She awaits vengeance. Be careful what you choose. Every line of dialogue out of my mouth is garbage. Like it is all prophecy trash.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, you know, the world around them is turning and they, you know, are right up at the door. Anna, however, is not prioritizing running. You know, she's getting ready to, you know, she's locked and loaded with another rock for Dahlia.
Mm-hmm.
And we get Pyramid Head shining moment
where
you know, where Dahlia gives Anna the evil eye. Pyramid Head appears, grabs Anna, tears off her clothes, and then her skin, throwing her rug like a big moist rug, throwing her skin at the door as it closes.
just tossing circulatory systems around.
Right.
And this comes into one of the weaknesses of this movie, and it's a big part at the end, but it happens with this too, where not just the violence, but just the way the violence it's not just that it exists, it's how it's articulated.
Yeah.
That it becomes Mortal Kombat fatalities.
Yep.
This is such a fatality, and it's so fucking dumb for like this very heady, like intellectual game.
Uh-huh.
Where the previously the most menacing thing Pyramid Head did was fuck a mannequin.
Right.
Now it's literally peel somebody's skin off and summarily toss their bloody skeleton at the church door. Like, yeah, get out of here.
Yeah.
Get
out of here.
How do you like bananas? Like,
yeah, Mortal Kombat fatality actually sums it up really, really well.
The ending of it too.
Uh-huh.
Like all the shit with the chains, man. Like all the barbed wire, like CGI spawn shit that happens at the end feels very fatality to me. And just like laughably dumb. Like violence, like I like violence in a movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, and that's something, you know, a lot of people, I feel like most people I know, especially in this year of our Lord 17, are way more squeamish about violence than they used to be.
Uh-huh.
That's not happened to me yet. I can still like get into violence effectively used. Mm-hmm. Like I can find it thrilling and good. This is not that.
No,
there's no gravity to it. Like you don't peel off somebody's skin. Like it's just like, you know, in literally like he does it like he's like peeling a banana.
Uh huh.
It's just one stroke. Like, you know, it doesn't. It's just like, why would it come off like that? Like all in just like one piece, you know?
So 2 points to make. You know, yes, Silent Hill games do have a lot of blood, a lot of gore, a lot of, let's say, varsity level disturbing imagery and ideas presented. It's oftentimes you're coming to it after the fact, or it is so abstract as to be just barely representative of the idea that they're getting across. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done a pretty good job of making that the case so far.
Yeah.
In the movie. Right. Here it is entirely leaning into movies of the time, which when I think about, let's say, horror movies from, let's say, 2004 to maybe 2009, it's torture porn.
Yeah.
Was the prevailing kind of idea. And I think that it's kind of the weakest move that they could have taken is to lean into the torture porn, you know, gore porn style thing, you know, for these climaxes. Yeah. Like it's just not inspired, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to shock. Pretty silly.
Yeah.
And then him like tossing at the door of the church, like it just, you know, this is supposed to be badass. I do not think so.
Right. You want to impress me? Throw the skeleton.
Yeah. Then we talk. They get in there, you know, obviously they ran here with a bunch of crazy cultists, and that's not going to end well. So the cultists all surround them and start calling them witches. Sybil shoots in the air, and they all get quiet.
Yeah.
Christabella approaches, and Anna's mother is there and kind of soothes her, and they start praying because they're all cuckoo bananas.
Yeah. Christabella, like, her actress has a striking face, I think. Like, her expression of, like, wide-eyed but menacing serenity, I think serves the character well. That said, the character's existence and everything that she says is the dumbest shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
She kind of looks like windblown Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, I really feel like it's too late to be introducing new characters into this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a little bit. Like we're not that far from the end of the movie.
Like an hour and 10 minutes into it.
Yeah, like, you know, we're well past the halfway point, and then it becomes this like second movie that like we're introduced to a second cast, it feels like.
Yeah,
like we have to care about Christabella, we have to find out more about the Gooch, who had like it previously had not really been very much of a character,
right?
You know, so yeah.
Yeah, but Christabella, you know, says a whole bunch of like vaguely cult-like things to get people to calm down. Like she is not trusting of either Rose or Cheryl, or sorry, Sybil. You know, far quite the opposite, but at least right now she's not going to have a bloodbath in this church just yet.
Yeah.
The real world, Chris is at the orphanage saying like, hey, have you seen this girl? Showing the picture. And she, the mother superior, freaks out like, hey, her story isn't hers alone. It's all of ours. And the Gooch is hot on the, hot on Chris's trail, trying to get him for breaking and entering.
So you gotta play Silent Hill, Origins 2. Gooch tales. At first he's just like, hey, I want these adoption records.
Yeah.
And then she's like, no. And then what happens in this, like, you know, somebody will show somebody a picture or say a name, and then it just becomes prophecy nonsense.
Yep.
like just non-information, like, oh, we don't say that name anymore, you know, but then no additional information or anything. And yet the characters still kind of move.
Yep.
You know, it's real silly. You know, so again, the Gooch pops in, you know, is, you know, arrest him for breaking and entering, but then takes him into this like briefing room, this like day room to explain things, and says like, hey, you know, this is what happened 30 years ago. There are these fanatics. Look at this, and shows his hands, and his hands are all scarred up. And he says like, you know, he says something like, you won't serve justice or something, Chris says. Mm-hmm. And then he says there are different kinds of justice.
There's man's justice, there's God's justice, and there's the devil's justice. You know, not all of those happen at once or something like that.
Even the devils.
Yeah, even the devils. Yeah.
Yeah.
So something's going on. The Gooch, let's just say Gooch, his hands are not clean.
Multi Gooches.
The multi Gooch, yeah.
Yeah.
The mini Gooch theory.
Yeah. Gooch is a flat circle.
If it is, I think you should get that checked out.
So anywho, Christabella is back there. She's going around doing her wide-eyed cultist thing, kind of toying with them and saying like, if you know, if you want that, they can go to the core of the darkness and face the demon, and that will tell you where Sharon is.
Yes.
And Sybil says like, you know, I will help you with this.
I will help you. The you reason know? Why? Well, here's the thesis for the movie.
Here's the quote from The Crow.
Is it the quote from The Crow? Really?
Yes. Except in The Crow, it's very similar. It's mother is the name for God. Okay. From the mouth of a child, I think is what they say in The Crow.
Oh God, that. I was like, okay.
Pretty much The Crow.
Yeah. So the quote here is, "Mother is God in the eyes of a child." Okay.
Yes.
Yep. There we go. Fine. That's not really borne out here because.
No, I mean, it's very hard, like, for me to think, like, if you ask me what this movie was about, I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, like, and it, I don't think this has a very good premise or theme, unlike the games, which do.
Right,
so,
right.
Like, this is, you know, this is, maybe that's what they're going for a theme, but they are too confused.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, Alessa's mother is such a non-character in this. Like,
yeah.
Like, nobody who actually hurt her is her mom, whereas in the games... Alessa's mom is like the root of it all, you know,
right.
Like
it's about guilt.
Well, no, like in Silent Hill 2, it is Silent Hill 1. Dahlia is unrepentant. Like she is the leader of the cult. She did everything to Alessa on purpose in order to usher in the birth of the new God.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So it's not about guilt, but you do have the surrogate mother or surrogate parent.
Yeah.
Kind of figure who comes in and rescues. So there's a little bit of like action that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the difference between the biological and the you know, kind of chosen or, you know, spiritual parenthood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and like Rose is really just a viewpoint for the viewer at this point. Like she doesn't, you know, like she is just kind of moving from objective to objective.
Yeah. And she has to come watch this cutscene pretty soon. that goes on for literal forever.
Yeah.
So.
So the center of the darkness is in the basement of Brookhaven Hospital. It wasn't Brookhaven Hospital, it was Alchemilla Hospital. In Silent Hill 1, Brookhaven's from 2 and 3. Christabella, you know, takes her there and says, like, hey, this room on this map is where the darkness lies. You need to memorize what you saw, you know, like what you saw here, how to get there, because the demon will both hide her location and hide behind the guise of an innocent.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. They give her a flashlight, cultist gives her that, saying they will be attracted to the light. Again, very video game gearing up.
Mm-hmm.
Christabella goes to return Rose's locket, but it opens and she sees Alessa. So Christabella freaks out,
right,
calling them witches again, because that is, and it's like this is the second time in like 10 minutes.
Yep.
This shit's happened. And it's like, oh, your daughter has the likeness of Alessa. Sybil, you know, Sybil stops them from pursuing her. Sends her into the elevator, which had like a piece of metal or a knife or something stopping it from closing.
Right, right.
Like, you know, takes it out of the way so she can go down in this impossibly long drop while the cultists just beat the shit out of her. And she gives us like I think that the lady who plays Sybil is generally a good actress, gives this like look that feels kind of shit eating to me when she looks at Rose in the elevator. Like, it doesn't look desperate, or I think there's like maybe trying to be badass.
Yeah.
It didn't read for me at all.
Huh.
And I was like, man, this sacrifice is dumb. Like, this feels unearned and stupid to me.
Yeah, both of you could have run in there and, you know, taken out the crossbar.
Move the little crossbar and, like, you know, and also, like, I don't know, like, you're not, this isn't really, like, helping her. Like, this is some being way too quick to, like, do a self-sacrifice.
Yeah, some Final Fantasy IV shit.
Yeah. So I don't dig this that much.
No.
Yeah.
I dig what happens in the basement a lot.
Yeah, the basement's great.
Yeah, up until you get to the cutscene.
It's like we're back in the front of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like oh, like, we're there again.
Because the door opens up to this bloody and smoking mess, and she's following the directions that she memorized. You know, left, right, left, left, right, up, up, down, down, all of that. Until she gets to this hallway that is just full of these jittering nurses.
Mm. And this is really great. Like, they're all together at the end of the hallway. They pretty much form like a wall.
Yeah, it's like they're frozen. It's like they're frozen mid dash.
Yeah, yeah, and they look perfect.
Yeah,
you know, they look great. They look game specific. Mm-hmm. And because of the light, you know, he says again they'll be attracted to it. She turns off the light, which they can't see, and she starts kind of scooting between them, trying not to touch them.
Right,
which is very cool. One of them, however, sniffs her and swings a scalp ladder, but she ducks. And the nurses, since they can't see, their faces are all like, you know, fused flesh and shit.
Yeah, they're all bubbled up.
Cut somebody else, and then they start fighting. Yeah. She's able to get through there. I think she broke a bone actually in real life.
Oh, geez.
In this scene, like, one of them actually struck her and hurt her badly.
Oh no.
Yeah. So she did not get through this without needing medical attention.
Yeah.
But it's a really cool scene.
Yeah. That's very good. Like, this is where they put the dancers on at full, you know, full effect. Like, they filmed them backwards and then played it forward, in order to make them look as unnatural as they do. You know, and like, she, to make sure they don't follow, she sets down the flashlight and points it at them. And like, they, instead of chasing her, they all start just kind of rushing toward the flashlight like a moth.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. And she opens the door and boom, screen goes white. And it literally says, "Congratulations, Rose. You did it. Your reward is the truth." Like, credits roll. Let's show you the stats. You beat the game in, it appears to be an hour and 40 minutes. You used 10 health sprays. Not that great.
So now we get the little movie within a movie. And when I say little, I don't mean little, because it's like it can certainly, like I said, it feels like 45 minutes. It is probably at least like 10 real minutes, which is a lot for a 2-hour movie to be this backstory. And it's like, it makes it, you know, as a work of adaptation, it makes this kind of thing, it's really interesting, because what this movie is good at is adapting that like feel and tone and kind of like loneliness and visuals.
Uh-huh.
But this kind of storytelling does not work. You know, video games have more than one way to tell a story. They don't just have to tell you the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That happens, and that's why you run into problems like David Cage and the like, where it's just like people just kind of tell you the plot.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here, and that wouldn't work in a video game. It doesn't work here.
No.
You know, but rest of other kinds of storytelling mediums, like only being able to just kind of tell you the story.
Yeah.
It's forced to kind of do that, because otherwise we're not going to have enough background for this to make logical sense.
Right.
And in the movie just dies on it.
Right. So it's like they looked at the runtime where they were at, they looked at how much budget they had left and said, "Oh shit, we wasted all this time making too much of this movie good. We need to, like, we have so much ground left to cover. Let's cram."
As opposed to leaving a lot of that stuff just open.
Right. Like, you know,
I
don't need the demon to tell me what purpose Colin served, because I saw what his tongue was doing, and I see what Alessa did to him. Like, I can kind of figure it out. I don't need to have that recapitulated. And there's a bunch of stuff that's recapitulated here.
Yeah.
You know, that just kind of doesn't need to be. So it is both treating the audience like an idiot and telling story in this manner that is so efficient as to be inefficient, right? By just being this exposition dump.
I'll even walk it back one thing further, which is that, like, If they had left Colin as it was, it would be kind of neat that you could put together and like see that he's a perv.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing some shitty stuff with his tongue. If they just didn't say that, you know, at all, would you have questioned it? You know, do we need to know every single building block of this origin story?
No.
No, we get it. Like, there's a lack of credit for like understanding genre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of just even just paying attention to stuff that came before.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, you pretty much know what's going on. You know, we saw the thing in the school thing with the girl being bullied and kind of mistreated. It's like, well, it's a logical extension of that, you know, but further. You know, it's that same similar kind of thing is going on here. And they continue to do expository stuff in the end, too.
Yeah.
So it's more than just this. Like, when we get back to real life, there's this, too. But, like, I would have liked to have a lot of these gaps unfilled.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And, like, the straw man opposition to that is, like, oh, well, it would have been too confusing. People wouldn't have, you know, understood it. They would have can't come away unsatisfied, et cetera, et cetera. They did anyway.
Yeah, it was already too confusing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so... Have the bravery to make something incomplete, I guess. I don't know. It's hard for me to separate my knowledge of the series from this, though. It's hard for me to not approach this as like a huge fan of the source material. So I don't, you know, I might need to recuse myself from actually talking about what would have been the right play there.
I just wish simplifying it quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, like just like it would have been okay for this girl to be mistreated and want this revenge. Without all of the detail of it.
Yeah.
You know, and become this kind of other being. Just with less detail.
Yeah.
You know, we understand that. Like, we don't need every single detail about it. And like, I feel like it would have been stronger if it hadn't been at the hands of or related to this cult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as well. Like, if it's just people, like a town with a secret.
Yeah.
You know, these people are still trying to live here, they're the holdouts and stuff. Why do they still stay here? Well, they can't leave. Mm-hmm. Why can't they leave? Well, let us put that together.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not like, there's not all this like religious imagery. There's not all of these like people in robes acting really anachronistic, you know, just like leave that out and just simplify it.
Yeah.
You know, like you have a Grudge, you have a Jingu or a Jangu or a Goku or whoever the Grudge is.
Juon.
Yeah. You have a Juon, like just treat it like a Juon.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes a Juon is just a Juon.
Yeah. Sometimes a Goku's just a Goku.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's cover this distance as quickly as we can.
Yeah,
she was bullied. She was victimized by the staff at the school. Her teacher and kind of the headmistress of the school was Christabella. So you know, obviously there, but she was also the leader of the church. You know, and they decided, okay, this child is different. She's a bastard. You know, like she didn't have a father like everybody else did. So we need to purify her because they sensed that the end was coming.
And even though Dahlia is my sister.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. So they gathered a special place of purity. Everyone dressed in like funeral clothes. I hate to keep like, if this even looked cool, though, it would be make a difference, which it just doesn't. Like,
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got all kinds of problems here because the cult in Silent Hill wasn't like this anachronistic thing. It wasn't like the village. It wasn't, it wasn't, what did I say earlier? The Crucible. It was more like an Eyes Wide Shut, you know, the Chamber of Commerce kind of thing. You know, it hid in plain sight in a way that this just does not.
A much more interesting angle.
Yeah. And the sacrifice, happens. They're actually cooking Alessa over this like cairn of coals, like this big vessel of them.
Yeah.
But something comes loose and knocks her over, setting the building on fire. And this fire, you know, descends like all the way down through the ground into the coal seam.
Yeah. This is where Gooch gets his origin story. That's why he has the scars. Mm-hmm. Is he, burns himself. He's trying to save Alessa.
Yeah.
With his hands. She is blackened and, you know, probably beyond saving. But he's trying.
Yeah. You know, the demon says fear turns to hate and hate starts to change the world. And now we are, you know, in the room. You know, we're not in the crazy flashback film anymore. You know, Rose is in there. There's an oxygen tent in the middle of the room and there's a nurse who is studiously trying to avoid facing the camera, you know, facing Rose. You know, so this pain, this suffering caused the demon to find Alessa, you know, and they promised that. The demon promised that she would take all of them, everybody who hurt her, into Alessa's darkest dream, which, okay, yes, that is kind of the way that works. Good on ya. You know, when their hands touch through the tent, everything goes dark and Rose is, you know, here as well. The nurse is crying in the corner. She won't show her face. Sorry, I repeated that. The demon assures Rose that Alessa won't hurt her. And there's this whole like, oh, we are legion kind of thing.
It's a little girl, and she's like, you know, I have many names, but now my name is the Dark Part of Alessa.
Yeah.
And like, it's clunky in a way that video game dialogue can be, but movie dialogue very rarely is.
Right.
Like, now my name is Dark Part of Alessa.
Yep.
Like,
this is the form I have taken. Yeah.
Yeah. pretty clunky.
Yeah. Sharon was the good part of Alessa, you know, hidden outside of the hell. And the actual physical form of Alessa is this 30-year-old woman or 37-year-old woman who is lying in the bed, mostly burned. Right.
Yes. So to recap for Roger Ebert, this woman who is sacrificed and beat up and stuff split into a little evil girl and a little good girl.
Yep.
And the little good girl was adopted. And that's it.
Yes.
So and got drawn back. The demon says Christabella will find Sharon and purify her. The demon embraces Rose and says all they need to do now is tell the truth.
Yeah. The demon cannot get into the church because of their blind conviction is what she says. And so she is going to get in through Rose is the idea. You know, now is the end of days and I am the Reaper.
Yeah. It's a little girl saying these things, so it sounds like shit.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be creepy, but this does not work for me one iota.
Yeah.
This stuff.
Also, it turns out that nurse who is looking away, that's Lisa. That's Lisa Garland from the first game. She had the gall to look in the tent and was scared at Alessa's appearance. So Alessa struck her eyes out of her head or like made them milky and white, and her whole face is like scarred up and stuff.
We're not done.
No.
Sharon wakes up in a, and that's actually like plenty of, like, doesn't explain it, like, god.
No, we need to have the bloodbath. Like, this movie has to have five different endings.
It's like, god damn it. Like, anyway, I feel like so many points we could have like jumped off this goddamn train. So Sharon wakes up, and like at this point, like, people are listening to this as an informal poll, just to answer to yourself. How many of you remember each person we're talking about and who they are and who they represent? I bet you it's 5% of the people, because this movie has introduced a bunch of different characters, like all at the end, that are all like, I mean, it's not like they're all like separate people, but they weren't part of the movie the whole time. So like at the very end, we've like tripled our cast.
Yep.
At the very end of this movie, like, if you remember who these people are, like, God help you. Cause like I barely do.
Hmm.
And half the time it's like through context clues.
Yeah.
Like I had such a hard time paying attention to this part of the movie where everyone gets named and everybody, gets things. And like a lot of times they just get named once. And it's like, oh, it's the frizzy haired lady.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's that other lady. You know, but I had a hard time keeping this shit straight. And I think it's probably why a lot of people found this confusing, because it is overly complex in like every way. It's not just the plot wise, but like, again, just tripling our characters, because we're dealing with two timelines here.
Yeah.
One of which is only kind of important. Like, it's like they snuck a Silent Hill's origin, like Silent Hill Zero movie, into the middle of Silent Hill.
Yeah.
So I'm getting mad reading these notes.
Sorry, man.
No, it's not your fault. It's like, it's just this fucking movie. So Sharon wakes up in a bed as the miners break in.
Yeah, she's just been sleeping quietly.
Yeah,
this whole
she's
time.
Fine. Dahlia rushes in to claim her at this point and say, no, this is my daughter. This
yeah,
is
mine. Yeah. Like, she's trying to hide, but Dahlia can find her. So yeah, she's captured. Sybil's captured as well. Detective Gucci drops Chris off again back in the real world, like back where Rose and Sharon were at the beginning, you know, by that cool field.
Yes.
as the cultists are building a pyre in the church, and Sybil is tied to this ladder in this cool striking thing, this cool striking scene that we actually see in the painting behind them too. They're going to like lower her over it so that she doesn't, you know, catch fire. She just, you know, burns and then eventually catches fire because of the heat. You're just not being dipped in. They're cooking like a marshmallow.
At some point, somebody questions this too. Like, it's like a witch, and someone's like, "You're burning the witch." Like, I feel like somebody says that. Like, there's a line where somebody says that fucking line.
Rose comes in and like, Christabella says, "Burn her," and Rose is like, "Oh, burn me? You just want to burn all your problems, don't you?"
Yeah. What the fuck? Like, what is even happening here?
Rose, you know, she has the confidence, she knows the truth. Like, she comes in as kind of a different character
She's like a weird, she's a demon golem at this point, because she comes in this is like as the fire is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it's like right
so people gets burned alive, like, and it's
really gruesome. Yeah.
It's gruesome. I feel like it's some like dodgy CG though.
Yeah.
Her face. I think it's the actress. I don't think that she sells it.
Hmm.
Getting burned alive. I might be spoiled by a very specific alive burning from Game of Thrones. I think is very horrific and good.
It's hard because the whole time she's trying to reason with them by calling them crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that always works. Yeah. But Rose's plan is to run in and get stabbed in the chest,
right.
Which will unleash the demon.
Right.
So as she falls down, she bleeds on the floor. It starts turning the other world in the church. And the way this movie ends is with the demonic force shooting barbed wire through everyone.
Right. So Alessa rises up as this hospital bed demon, kind of like at the end of Silent Hill 2. And is just, you know, in this nest of barbed wire that is going around, like it wraps, like it cocoons somebody and then constricts, turning them into like mist.
Yeah. It fatalities them.
Yeah.
That would be a fatality. The reptile would do that. Like that is one of reptile's signature moves, dog.
Yeah. And as this is happening, the demonic Alessa, the creepy little girl, is crawling up the ladder, kind of like slowly and determinedly, you know, out of hell. Very gratuitously, they deal with the demon deals with Christabella by grabbing her arms and legs, pulling them all separate, and then
a bunch of barbed wire up her gooch.
Yep, up her vagina and anus. So it goes out of her mouth and then out of her chest on either side, and then rips her in half.
She fucking tubes her, like she does the Mr. Fantastic version of the Aristocrats to her. But with barbed wire, because this movie is like totally fucking all over the place,
yeah.
And like just has this ending that is just like, again, just like really shitty fatalities. Mm-hmm. And Christabella, again, nobody feels like it's like the main character is so good at being scared. Sybil didn't seem like she was in pain. Christabella doesn't seem like she's in that much pain.
No.
The most painful thing that I can imagine is happening to her. Like, I don't know if the actress decided to make a choice and try to sell it as like religious ecstasy.
Right.
Or some kind of just insanity. But like, it makes it look really fake and shitty when the character doesn't look like they're in pain. Or they don't react to specific things, like the barbed wire like shot out of her cheek or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to see her wince or like try to like get away from it or pull away or something.
That feels like they just told her, hey, writhe around in generic agony and we will do this in CGI later. You know, it feels like a different version of the problem of them dodging the CGI knife. You know?
Yeah. It's literally, because this ending is literally an afterthought. Like the original plan was to have Pyramid Head, everyone's favorite chili dog loving hedgehog, show up with
to have eight of them, to have a whole bunch of pyramid heads come in, each of them with different, like,
the different layers of Dante's Inferno or something like that. Like it's some kind of symbolic thing, and then just kind of slaughter the congregation, which like that probably would have been rife with dumb fatalities too.
Yeah,
but at the very least wouldn't be this like it literally looks like Spawn to me.
Yeah,
barbed wires.
This is
around.
The thing that was pulled from an erotic anime.
Like, in case you had to guess, the barbed wire going up this woman's vagina was pulled from one of Christoph Gahn's favorite erotic anime. So
I don't need to hear about this anime. I don't need to be told.
Nobody at me and tell me how good the erotic anime is. Yeah. I'm good, dog.
Yeah.
Like I don't need it. I lived it.
Yeah. I saw it.
I watched it. Dahlia's super, super scary. This is where like we're getting to the end here, where like it like pretty quick.
Yeah.
Dahlia is terrified, you know, at Demon Daughter.
Backing away on this blood soaked carpet. I love the image of like just the blood just kind of like rising up as she walks along it.
Like pooling up it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. All this ends, you know, Sharon is up on the upper floor, you know, and Rose is there trying to get her to cover her eyes because she doesn't want her to see, you know, what's going on. Because, I mean, I don't want to see what's going on. It's awful. As the demon, as Demon Alessa, crests and, you know, looks and makes eye contact with Sharon and they merge. They both pass out.
Yes. So we get to the coda here. The church is empty. It's all misty now. We're no longer in. You know, sub Silent Hill world.
Mm-hmm.
So Dahlia's there. And she's like, you know, why did she not take me like the rest of the cultist?
Mm-hmm.
Remind you, you're her mother. Mother is God in the eyes of a child. Sharon gives kind of a creepy look here because remember she has the demon in her now. She's both.
Yeah.
It's all things. She's a wife. She's a mother. She's a bitch. She's a lover. She's a sinner. She's a saint. She's all the things now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that gets muddled too, because like in the game, it actually is, you know, the two parts of Alessa merging back together into what eventually becomes, you know, Heather. You know, Heather Morris later on. The introduction of this demon that actually is the bad part of her is actually very confusing, and it muddles things up because it was always Alessa that did this, not anything that came from elsewhere. It was heightened and powered by the presence of the demon inside of her, but it was never actually an aspect of her personality.
Mm. Yeah.
Ugh. So yeah,
no longer though.
No longer. They get in the car. It finally turns over with with Alessa's help. She decides to let the car turn on, and they drive back to the misty version of their home as Laura's theme plays. Chris wakes up in IRL. You know, they're in the living room, you know, the misty, desolate version of that. You know, he's in the sunny version. He goes outside and sees that the driveway is empty. Boom, spooked, mirrors.
Well, she tries to call him at this point, too.
Oh, yeah.
And she thinks she's leaving him a message. She can't tell. But then it goes to him, and it's just doing the static on the answering machine.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's you know, they never left Silent Hill. Silent Hill followed them out.
Yeah, they are stuck in this in-between dimension.
Does the second movie follow up on that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Rose's character found one half of the seal of Metatron. And use that to send Sharon back into the real world. And at the very end, Sean Bean decides to stay in the fog world to go find Rose and bring her back himself.
Okay.
Spoilers for a movie nobody should watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't. So it's like, it's funny like watching this doing this episode, because I got more mad as it went on, as the material got more dumb, until I was like, at the end, I was like, man, I'm pissed at this movie. And it's like, no, I didn't dislike this movie. I had a good time watching it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's very frustrating.
Yeah. They just made some very bad choices in the service of, I think, making it less interesting than the source material, you know, and just like some very bad, just basic filmmaking choices as well, you know?
Yeah. It makes me think of like how, I wonder how like Christoph Gans must be like, or the writer, you know, whoever's responsible for adding in that, over detailed backstory to this, like must play video games in a very different way than I do, you know, where it's like they needed a big picture thinker on the set.
Yeah.
You know, somebody needed to be involved in the creation of this who is like more, you know, understands the emotional truth and broad strokes of this rather than getting, you know, pegged down with, you know, what was that janitor about? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we saw somebody get bullied. We saw we could have seen like a teacher get involved in that and just, you know, wiped over the whole thing.
Yeah.
And just save that scene. And then just you do that with, you know, I don't know, 20 minutes out of every 40 for the last 40 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, cut that in half.
There's no reason for this to be a 2-hour movie.
No.
there really and truly isn't, because there's no economy to it. Like where there is economy, it is used incredibly well. It's just that like they decided to buy those good sections. You said it really well. They decided to buy those good sections by making the other parts worse. You know, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be a zero sum game for quality.
No. And if you can't make a 2-hour long movie and have it be entirely good, make an hour and a half long movie. That would be entirely good, or an hour and 20 minutes movie and make it entirely good.
Yeah.
You know, don't, it's a bad place to sacrifice.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah. So final judgments on this. I think that this is mostly a good adaptation aside from like the spirit and general, just kind of, let's say, mode of storytelling, you know, it just, who knows if it actually would have been possible to like harness that, but like this was obviously made with care and love by people who understood at least what makes a lot of the aesthetic work, the fatalities aside. right?
Yeah.
Like the those homages and things like hue very closely in a way that benefits. Now, who knows how much of that was kind of being born on third base, because Silent Hill is, you know, an Eastern take on Western horror, specifically Western horror movies, you know, and literature. So all they had to do is just like backport it. You know, the source material was there for them to excel at. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this is like one third of an extremely good movie. I would say if you're like down for this, watch up to when they get to the hotel, like rent this on iTunes or rent this on Amazon or whatever. It'll be a good $4 well spent to like get the sense for this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that like you will get a good experience then. And if you want to watch until the end of the movie, you know, if you're at that point, you are somehow invested, like you're not going to hurt yourself getting to the end. It's not the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It's not the dumbest thing we've done on the show. It's only really suffers that much from comparison to what came before. And you know, it becomes just merely not worth watching. Not like something like, you know, it doesn't become Alone in the Dark.
Right.
You know, and the part of that though, is that like the bad parts of this never get funny.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of like, it would be very hard to do that and rectify it with the first part of the movie, but like, don't think some of the bad stuff we've explained or we've talked about is like good funny.
No.
Or like good bad. It's not. It's just, it's like kind of pedestrian bad bad.
It's a lot of people in robes with ratty hair screaming, you know, burn her.
Yeah. The chosen one, the prophecy fulfilled. Like, you know, there's a man, I would love to, like, I fucking love cults. Like, I don't want to get rid of cults, but like, this really shows me like the downside of cults. Like,
yeah.
How bad can cults get?
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, I'd hate to be this guy again. The cult in Silent Hill was never explicitly like based on Christianity. Like it was this weird form of like native paganism that took some of the trappings, like a couple of the trappings of Christianity to hide, to give themselves some kind of air of legitimacy. But like there is a tremendous amount of like alchemy involved in it. It is far more textured and interesting than this, which is just straight up Crucible, you know, straight up just like Salem witch trial stuff, which is like, I'm just tired of it. It sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty boring. I would much rather see, you know, I want to see a cult like the cult in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
You know, I need it to have like a cover.
Yeah, an HOA.
Like a cult just, you know, if you just take a cult and just have them operate like in cult, it's like nudity, right? Like, you know, like I want to see boobs, but I don't want to just like be at a nudist colony. You know, like it's like it needs to be like a hidden thing.
Yeah.
Like it is it's the cover story that makes it.
Mystery is good. Intrigue is good. In nudity and in horror.
Yes. And in the world of Silent Hill. Yeah, it was still it's I'm glad we watched it.
Yeah. Thank you for going on this. I know we had been talking about it for a while. I think we wanted to save it. But yeah, thank you for going on this ride.
No, I thought we'd already done it. So I didn't think that we had talked about it for a while. Like I could have swore we already did it. So I'm fine. This just makes like real life line up with my memories. So
you're that much closer to Leaping Home.
Yes, exactly. Almost like 100% parody with the hard drive that collects me. We don't know. Again, next month is going to be a Duck Tracks. So, watch Patreon for where, you can submit those questions. We'll put out the call and, we don't know what we're doing in November for an adaptation, but, as I mentioned last episode, like we're probably at a point now where we can start accepting suggestions.
Yeah.
You know, there aren't an unlimited number of these things. So there's something you'd want to see, shoot it our way. I'm always going to favor TV shows and movies over books. Like someday I want to do books for this, but they also take a lot longer to digest.
Yeah. We have specifically two books that we want to do. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we will do them at some point, but it just, you know,
funny.
Yeah, tons of extra reading time.
This has been a crazy year.
So. Yeah. This has been a crazy year. So, yeah, other than that, thanks for supporting us on Patreon. Thanks for purchasing this. If you purchased it, we really do appreciate your support.
I think that's pretty much everything. We will see you next time, whatever that next time might be. And in 2016, we vow to find a better sign-off.
Umbasa.
Umbasa.